Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Well, hello, everybody. This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 124, and it is October 17th, 2022. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. A brief intro to the show today would be author Leslie Kane will be here with her novel, Secrets in the Mirror, and she'll be along here in about 15 minutes. Now more about us. Here's where you can find us out there on Facebook, the Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net. That's thomasriddell.net. In the blog section and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for the Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiddell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we'll get back to you. A special note, we can also now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, Showcasing New Authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike. And I also review books on both sites as well. Atmosphere Press Sponsoring is the host of They are the sponsorship, Atmosphere Press, and having hosted the Writer's Lounge broadcast for over 11 years now. Can you believe it? I'm always excited to announce a new sponsor to the broadcast. And now Terry and I are very happy to have them with us on board as our sponsor. We'll be hearing more from them as we move forward. And if you're a writer just starting out in this exciting world of writing and are looking to get published, the following message is for you. And we'll be right back after this.
Hey there, we're Atmosphere Press, a professional and welcoming alternative to traditional publishing. Founded in 2015 by Austin-based writer Dr. Nick Courtwright, Atmosphere Press is dedicated to getting awesome books in print while also ensuring that authors retain 100% rights, royalties, and final artistic autonomy over their own work. Amosphere has published over 700 books in a range of genres, from novels to poetry collections to memoirs and children's books, and our books have received countless starred reviews and book prize honors. If you're an author looking for a true partner in the bookmaking process, we hope to hear from you. Check out our website at atmospherepress.com and consider sending us your manuscript today.
Once again, thank you, Atmosphere Press, for being with the broadcast. Upcoming authors and the Writers Lounge on October 24th, that's just next week, author Neil McMillan will be here to start off a Halloween special. He wrote Haunted Onondaga County. This is a special Halloween broadcast. Onondaga County sits in the middle of New York State, or as most people prefer to call it, Central New York. It encompasses the city of Syracuse and is home to a rich and intriguing history, which includes tales of ghosts and other paranormal activity. We'll dive right into the subject matter of ghosts and paranormal activity, and we'll also talk with Neil, who is also a historian. So stay tuned for that. On October 31st, which is Halloween, author Connie Howell will be here with her book, Perfectly Imperfect, How to Be Imperfect and Remain Lovable. It's a title that speaks for itself. So if you are a person who strives to be perfect, like me, but you fall short much of the time, tune in or click in to listen to this show. I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows here on the Writer's Lounge. Next up is Writer's Topic, and this is where I introduce my co-host, and she is the author of Sunflowers Beneath the Snow. And if you haven't read that tale yet, get out there to your nearest bookseller and buy it. It's an exciting read. I'm sure you will love it. And now it is my pleasure to bring on Terry Brown. And I'll just push the button here. And hopefully Terry is there coming down out of the clouds. I understand that somebody referred to you not too long ago as having the writing abilities of a very famous author. Would you like to share that story?
Well, yeah, it was kind of crazy. I was on a podcast as a guest, and there was a host and a co-host, and one of them asked me, have you ever considered yourself to be a modern-day female Ernest Hemingway? And my head grew so large that I really did have trouble getting out of my office. And then the host then said, oh, I disagree. I think she's more like Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather. And so I've been stuck in my office ever since.
Wow. That big head keeps you floating up into the – I just picture it now. You can't get out. You're floating in the ceiling, and you're stuck there.
I'm just floating on the ceiling. I'm stuck in this room. It's been, you know, it's been difficult. Yeah. It was crazy. It's something that you just don't expect them to say, and I had no good answer for had you ever considered yourself other than no.
I haven't been referred to any famous author yet. I'm still waiting for that to happen. So if anybody's out there who would like to read what I wrote, which is Poppy's Prison, it's a historical fiction about the Prohibition times where my grandfather happened to be an integral character in that story. Get out there and buy that book, and hopefully I'll be compared to somebody like Ernest Hemingway too, but I'm just going to sit and wait for that because I'm not sure it's going to come anytime soon. But anyways, Terry, we're going to talk about tonight banned book. Now, I have done a little bit of research on my Facebook a few nights ago, and I understand there's you got a long list of banned books that you sent me, and I have one of my own, and it wasn't on your list, but I found it amazing, a few of the books that they banned, and one of them is from Dr. Seuss, and the name of the book is Hop on Pop, and the reason why they're banning it, wait for it, encouraging children to use violence against their fathers. And, of course,
yeah,
my favorite story of all time would be The Wizard of Oz. Apparently it depicts women in leadership roles, and someone didn't like that. So what do you got to say about the subject?
Yeah, so, you know, I understand that people don't necessarily like all books and that not every book is for every person. I even understand that you personally might not wish to read a book, or when your child is young, and you're still picking books for them, that you might choose not to read a particular book because it goes against something, you know, that you're trying to teach your child. But when it comes to actually banning the book for these reasons, I have a real problem with that. I mean, the list that I have is huge. It goes from things like Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings for racism, Ernest Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms because of crude language, sexual content, and violence, The Great Gatsby, The Lord of the Rings, Grapes of Wrath, Call of Wild, Gone with the Wind, Hunger Games, Slaughterhouse-Five. I mean, it just goes on and on. And imagine what our world would be like if we didn't have those books. One of the ones on the list is The Grapes of Wrath, and that's the first book that I ever read that helped me see that literature was more than just a story, but that there was something that the author was trying to help you see, to help you explore. And so, you know, I kind of believe more in, like, self-censorship. If there's a book you don't want to read because it doesn't suit you or it doesn't feel good to you, by all means, don't read it. But I hate the idea that we're going to ban it so that no one else can read it either. Like, who gets to make that decision?
Right, and I think, too, the parents should be deciding maybe what their younger children should be reading. And as the children get a little bit older, maybe the children should make their own decisions, because after all, when we send them to school, don't we teach them to think and to be critical thinkers and make decisions like that? I did notice on one of the books, I think it was on your list, which was Huckleberry Finn. Now, that book, I can understand why somebody would obviously ban that, because there's racial slurs in the book. But when you consider the time that that he wrote about it, Mark Twain wrote about, it was an everyday word that was used all the time. And whether you liked it or you didn't.
Right. I just think about the idea that's a good way to have that conversation. I mean, if your child brings home a book and there is a word in it that is no longer, you know, a socially acceptable word, or there's words in it that you don't wish to use in your own home, what a great way to start that conversation and to talk about it and to have, you know, like an open discussion about what it is about the book that you have problems with, and then hear their point of view and you know, even be able to point out that even though, for instance, the Huckleberry Finn has a word in it that we don't like, what is good about the book? You know,
right.
just because a book has something you don't like, it doesn't mean usually that the entire book is rotten. It just might mean that there's something in it that is offensive to you. What a great way to have that conversation.
Right. Not only that, but Mark Twain liked to present his characters as authentic as possible. And how can you write a story when you have to gloss over all these words that might be offensive. It doesn't necessarily mean that the author is trying to be offensive. It means that one of his characters is being himself. And that's
exactly.
The magic of that book is that you learn to listen to the actual characters, and you can't shut down that word. And several of the other words that come up even in modern society now that we don't like to hear and is sometimes banned on TV. But I like my characters authentic. I like to know that they seem like real people, and that does it. The book doesn't become banned until it is removed from our curriculum or library, and this means that free access to the book is no longer available in the designated institution or in more extreme cases prohibited by law. However, while books are challenged regularly, only when what I read about is only about 10% of books that are challenged are actually banned. So, we really need to think about this, but without getting too much into the weeds on this, I think a lot of it has become kind of political. And
yep.
That makes me cringe too. I'm just totally against it. I understand people are offensive, and I agree with you. Let's have the conversation and talk about it instead of just outright banning it. Because obviously these people that are looking to ban books are the ones that they're going to go out and buy the banned books because they want to know what's so offensive. So it's sort of promoting them too, because you can't stop all of it. There's books in print that will always be there. So anyways, before we get too far in here discussing that, I could go on with that. Let's get on to the main event here. And the main event tonight would be, let's see, the main notes here is Leslie Kane, of course, and she's waiting here in the switchboard, and she wrote Secrets in the Mirror. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening in live to the program, call in the phone number, area code 914-219-0868. You can talk to Leslie and myself and Terry and my review of Secrets in the Mirror. Gavin and Devin are mirror twins. They are physiologically reversal of each other, not just in how their body's organs are set up, but in how they respond and react to the world around them. Their mob-connected father approves of Devin and wants to mold him for his own needs, while Gavin is seen by him as a nerd, someone who is best suited to protect Devin at all costs. Gavin plays his role as the good and caring brother because he truly wants to help his brother, but at the same time, he recognizes that his brother is a sociopath who has gotten himself involved in drugs, and this evolves into dangerous, escalating criminal activity. Bullied by his own dad and a victim of narcissistic gaslighting by his brother, Gavin's self-esteem has bottomed out. He looks to a few loyal friends who tell him that he can't save his twin, but he must save himself. Gavin begins a journey to do just that and to find success and love. He flees to a place of paradise far away, but his sociopathic brother and the mob soon find him. How does anyone escape narcissistic abuse and the dangerous life of crime when it's deeply ingrained in your family and in your DNA? Leslie Kane touches on all these very important issues in this work of fiction. Those are very important topics that have a solid base in the reality of our own lives today. Other than being an author, she has had an education and career in psychology and government intelligence, and it certainly shows up on the pages here in her first published novel. The characters were well-developed, and the plot was plausible and interesting, but what held back the story from being more engaging was a lack of more conflict and plot twists around the characters in the beginning. But the author remedied that at about the midway point, where things really heated up, and then she totally pulled me into the story. It fell just short of a 4-star review. This is a good first novel for the author. She has the skills and the knowledge to improve her craft, and I look forward to Leslie Kane's future works. Secrets in the Mirror is well worth the read. And now, let's open the door, Terry, and talk with Leslie Kane. And Leslie, are you there?
I am.
Well, there you are, and you're sounding good. And where are you calling from?
San Miguel de Allende, Mexico.
Yes, I noticed the numbers here. You didn't really have an area code. There's a lot of bunch of numbers. I thought she must be calling down in Mexico because I knew that's where you live now. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just flew back this afternoon from the U.S. where I was at a writers' conference, the Women's Fiction Writers Association conference retreat, and it was really great to see people for the first time in the flesh that I had only been connected with through Zoom and Facebook.
Yeah.
So that was pretty exciting. As a matter of fact, one of my critique partners was there, and it was very gratifying. You know, a lot of people are thrilled to be escaping the constraints of COVID.
Yes, it is beautiful to see, and especially watching baseball on TV and seeing all those fans in the stands without masks on. It really makes me feel good. And of course, we'll never forget that time in our lives when we were all stuck at home on Zoom. So welcome out of your captivity, Leslie. And you certainly have experienced a lot in life, running away at 15 years old, after which you did a lot of traveling and you had several interesting careers. Tell us how you got started as a writer and how is life treating you after all of that?
Well, I've always written, even as a kid. And in my careers, it was mostly nonfiction, scientific, technical, business, that sort of thing. And when I started getting to the point where I was sort of winding down my career, and I was switched from working for government intelligence and became executive director of CHAD and regional director of NAMI, I started playing around with writing fiction and got a few short stories published in literary journals and anthologies. And then some of my characters started pestering me to write a longer story. And so Secrets in the Mirror is my second novel. My first novel is still sitting on the shelf asking me to revise it significantly. But I feel pretty good about Secrets in the Mirror. And Gavin, the protagonist in this novel, came to me early one morning when I wasn't quite awake and informed me that I was wrong. There would be a sequel, that many ends had not been tied up, and tying up those ends presented a challenge. And, oh, by the way, Gavin still hadn't fully recovered from the trauma that is at the end of the book, so I won't I won't tell the ending. The sequel is going to be quite interesting. It's going to be a mystery, and much will be revealed.
Very good. And Terry and you are connected through Atmosphere Press. So Terry,
I have read her wonderful book, and I think I may have commented on one of her posts that even though what's happening in Ukraine right now is really terrible on a global basis, the timing of her book was so serendipitous.
Yes, it was. And Ernest, you got the next question. Terry? Did we lose Terry? Oh, my goodness. Are you still there, Leslie?
I am.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Terry. It's showing up here that she's here. And, well, anyways, let's go on to the next question. Hopefully she can get back in here. I don't know what happened here. Another little glitch happens sometimes with the technology here at the Blog Talk Radio. And hopefully we can correct that. Looks like she hung up and maybe she will call back in. But as a psychology professional, what drew you into writing Secrets in the Mirror the most? Are the conflicts that the characters in your story face unique to our society?
Well, there were two factors that influenced me to write this particular story. One was
Leslie,
I know yes.
Leslie,
can you
hold
hear
on
me?
Just a second? I have
sure.
I have Terry, I think, back on the line. Terry,
yeah,
are
I'm
you
back.
There?
I have. Yeah, I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me. I have no idea what happened.
Wow. So go ahead, Terry, and like I was saying, you and Leslie are partners with Atmosphere Press, and
mm-hmm.
she mentioned that she had left a comment to you regarding your book. So go ahead, and you've got the next question. I already asked about the psychology professional, so.
Okay, well, I was going to talk with you just about the idea about the narcissist, because I was married to one. And, you know, the idea that we really don't have a choice in some cases not to interact with them. But I was unaware of what I was interacting with until, like, I was, like, way too involved. So, you know, as the psychologist, what kind of behaviors should people be aware of when they're dealing with people so that they know when they've got a narcissist on the line, and then what should they do about it?
Probably the most obvious behavior that you need to be aware of is when someone persistently and frequently, let me back up and just note that of the list of behavioral symptoms of any personality disorder, you can cherry pick them and see them occurring in perfectly normal people at some times. But for someone with narcissistic personality disorder, it is really frequent and almost constant, these certain behaviors. And the most obvious is when someone is negating your view, your opinion, your personhood. So in the second half of the first chapter, there's an exchange between the twins that is classic narcissistic gaslighting, where Devin is denying that Gavin knows what he's talking about and denying everything that Gavin feels. And that is a constant refrain in narcissists. There are other mm-hmm. behavioral indicators as well, but that one is the most obvious. A lot of the others are more subtle, and I won't go into them. The book in the third or fourth chapter, the doctors in the hospital where Devin is, because he was drinking at their 16th birthday party and stole someone's keys and took a car to go get some more booze and or drugs, actually. And the doctors are telling the parents exactly what are the symptoms, the behavioral symptoms of narcissistic personality disorder. So if mm-hmm. anyone really wants to try and understand narcissistic personality disorder, it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And so there, Tom, to answer your question before Terry got back on, there were two reasons why I wrote this book. One, is I know someone whose two daughters, adult daughters, who had always been so close as children, the older daughter started narcissistic abuse on the younger daughter. And it drove a wedge in them, and it was really sad to see, and it drove a wedge between this person I know and his older daughter as well. And, of course, the other reason is that we know some key public figures who definitely have malignant narcissistic personality disorder, where the malignant narcissistic personality combines attributes of other personality disorders, such as antisocial personality disorder. And that's what Devin ends up degrading into, and even into psychosis. So, Tom, you mentioned that there wasn't enough excitement in the early part of the book. That's because it's a complete dive into watching the degradation of the personality of Devin and the damage that Gavin is trying to get out from under, because his whole personhood, his agency, has been destroyed by his father bullying him and his twin brother abusing him, narcissistic abuse. So it's the book is actually a dysfunctional family saga, and because of the mental illness and the background of the father, the whole story degrades into what my publisher likes to think of as a thriller, but it is in no way a stereotypical thriller where you're on the edge of your seat every minute.
Right.
There's suspense,
right.
Yes, but not, I never wanted to call it a thriller.
Yeah, you did a very good job, and it was very apparent as I wrote in my review that you've got some experience in this field, and I'm wondering, as a psychologist working with and talking to patients, have you had the opportunity, probably more, that you've had the opportunity more to talk with the victims of narcissistic behavior rather than the actual narcissists themselves? Because my understanding of it is that the narcissists don't usually like to go into therapy. There's a book that was written several years ago that I got deep into because I recognized some relationships that I was in that involved sociopathic behavior, and it was called The Sociopath Next Door by Mary Stout. I'm not sure if you read that, but that really opened up my eyes. Yeah, but
yeah.
I'm just wondering if you had the opportunity to really sit down with a narcissist and really dig deep.
Yes, I have. In two particular occasions where their personality disorder had degraded into psychosis, and that's the extreme. And there is sociopathy, of course, which Devin certainly exhibited, but towards the end, he starts falling apart into psychopathy, which is a detachment from reality.
Right.
And so the two that I personally dealt with on a professional basis had degraded into psychopathy, and it's at that point that you try to administer certain medications, but talk therapy will never work for a narcissist because they're perfect and they know everything.
Right.
So
very good.
Yeah.
Very good. getting back to the writing process, I could talk to you all night about your profession and the the medical end of it and what you have to deal with when you're trying to talk to these people. But what did you most enjoy about the writing process of writing Secrets in the Mirror, and what did you not enjoy as much?
I loved that my characters came alive to me. Now, that part of that is because I adhere to the rigor of deeply interviewing my characters. But it's not the case for all writers that their characters, even if they interview them, become so embroiled in the author. My characters, especially Gavin, come to me in my dreams and tell me, no, that's not right. That plot point, no. Kill that scene altogether. This is what is supposed to happen. And the plot expanded exponentially because of what my characters told me. And I love that. And the fact that Gavin has already told me the plot of the sequel. And I'm flabbergasted and honored.
You actually dreamed it?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
You know how it is when you wake up in the morning and you're not really awake and you're drifting back and forth between sleep and being awake? And that one morning, that was it.
He
literally said, "You think there's not a sequel, but wait a minute, there are all these loose ends."
Terry, has it ever happened
to you?
Well,
not quite that way, but I do have my characters talk to me all the time, and I love that feeling, except when I think I know where I'm going, and, I'm ready to move forward, and my character refuses to go with me. And, they're pretty much telling me, no, that's not what we're doing. We're doing this over here. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to tie it all up in a nice little neat bow right here. And they're like, nope, that's not where we're going. So
I love it. Isn't that great, Terry?
Yeah. No, it's great to hear that other authors say that, because sometimes I do think that maybe, medication might go a long way. So.
Or a few glasses of wine.
Seriously, something, yeah. Hey, I'm curious, Leslie, why did you decide to go with Atmosphere Press?
I wanted to go hybrid. I'm a senior citizen, and I don't have forever to wait to see my book published. And also, with what's happening in the publishing industry, I was discouraged about going traditional. And the kicker was when I started getting the standard form letter from the agent, doesn't fit with my list. But they would go into my spam folder to be discovered months later when I was cleaning out my spam folder.
Right.
So, that told me something is seriously going on with the publishing industry. And I've heard from a lot of other authors the same story. So I wanted to go hybrid. I didn't want to self-publish because that's a steep learning curve, and I'm impatient.
Exactly.
And so I checked out all of the presses that claimed to be hybrid. Some were not, in that they were taking just about any book.
Right.
So,
they were more of a vanity press.
Correct. But Atmosphere has a lot of good books that they've put out. And I talked to Nick and Kyle, and they convinced me to go with Atmosphere. And Cami Finch is just the best. Absolutely
yes,
the best. And you had her on your show. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, she's done really well, and she did a really good. I'm going to put in a plug for her little ad commercial at the beginning of the show. She did an exceptional job with that, so it was really nice. And I hope that we can remain with them. They're under contract with me for, I think, 5 shows, and then we'll go from there to see if they want to stick around. But I hope they do, because it's introduced me to, they have introduced me to both you and Terry, who have done exceptional jobs in your craft. And both of you have a lot of future here. So even though we're senior citizens, or I think maybe Leslie and I are senior citizens, I don't think Terry's reached that
I'm pushing it really hard.
Yeah, so God bless you there, both of you. And I'd like to ask Leslie, do you have any routines that you go through before you sit down to write? And where is your most favorite place to go to write?
I have a special chair, or I should say, my cat and I have a special chair. Seriously, it's a big overstuffed chair with an ottoman, and I'm not a very wide person at all. And so I sit on one side of the cushion, and she sits on the other side, and she's getting on in years, probably in cat years a little bit worse than I am. And she needs, and that's a pun, she needs me and she needs me.
Yeah. That's good. Go ahead, Terry.
So I'm curious, Leslie, are you a pantser or are you a plotter?
It's the combo, and I defy anyone to be purely one or the other. The combo is you have sort of the outline of a plot. Or at least that's the way I start out. And you start writing, and your characters, it's this synchronicity between the character and the plot. The plot will prompt the character to respond in a certain way and introduce new ideas that you hadn't thought of. And then what the character wants to do will alter the plot. So that synchronicity is the hybrid between plotting and pantser. What about you, Terry?
I'm a pantser. I know you, say that, oh, I am such a pantser. With Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, the only thing I knew was the ending. And I knew the ending
because...
that's
the only thing I don't know. Hey, seriously, that's the only thing I don't know.
Well, I knew the ending because that was the true piece of the story.
Oh, yeah.
I had someone tell me this story, and it was like it was so impressive and so amazing that I wrote 82,000 words of fiction so I could tell that ending. But I had no clue how I was going to get there.
Ah.
So, no, I'm very much a pantser.
I'm also a pantser. I that's how I operate, and I very rarely know the ending of a story. I'm writing a horror story right now, and I did come up with the ending, which when that happens during the process is really kind of cool, because that's when you know the whole story is kind of got legs and it's coming together, and you know where you got to go. You just have to get there, and how you're going to get there is the challenge. But yeah, I don't do outlines when I write. I just let it flow. So Leslie, you live in Mexico now, and what's life like there, and will you ever write about it?
I have a couple of ideas. I'm going to have to make the time to do the research necessary. You know, every novelist spends months on the research before they start writing the story because you want to make sure that it's authentic. And a couple of stories that I have in mind leverage the indigenous myths and the history and the beliefs. And I'm going to have to get better at my Spanish. My second language is German, so Spanish is very difficult for me.
Very good.
So, one thing I would like to say, if it would be okay, Tom, is that
sure.
The conference that I went to in the U.S., it just got back, is Women's Fiction Writers Association. And their definition of women's fiction is that the protagonist goes through an emotional journey to transformation. And all four of my main characters, the mother, the father, and each of the twins, take their own emotional journey to transformation. Some of them succeed and some of them don't. You've read the book. So, the father has to get rid of the misogyny and the mob background that he grew up with. And Gavin has to survive the narcissistic abuse that destroyed his self-esteem, his agency, his ability to be his own person. And by the end of the book, he thinks that he did, but the sequel will show that he didn't really, that he's still struggling with it. Devin,
well, I think that's true of people. I think that's true of people with any kind of abusive situation. Is
yes.
You think
yes.
That, you know, because I lived in an emotionally abusive relationship for several years, and generally speaking, I'm over it. And every now and then, my therapist calls it swamp gas, and the swamp gas mm-hmm. comes bubbling up out of nowhere. And then you have to stop and think, well, where did that come from and why did it show up now? And it's amazing the things that still are kind of there to haunt you that you thought that you
yes.
had already fixed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kinda Gavin like, will be triggered yeah. big time in the sequel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And, I think with the triggers that are around today and all the baggage that we carry on through the years, some people like to talk about PTSD and not really sure, you know, and some people say, well, I have PTSD. I don't really have PTSD, but I know that when I'm triggered by something somebody says or does, I know it brings up a memory of a past relationship that was not especially good. So, you know, it's a struggle sometimes to get through those little bumps in life, but it's good to know that there are people out there like yourself, Leslie, who can sit down and help others do it. I spent 3 years in therapy for severe depression and was homeless for 3 years and came out of that swinging and ready to get on with my life. So I'm really, really happy that I had somebody that I could count on to help me get through all of that. And Terry, you too had gone through that
right.
emotional
right.
abuse, and you have come out, and I think you did it through a nice long bicycle ride. So
yeah, for me it was an adventure. I went and did something big and bold and came out the other side realizing that, you know, I had the capability of doing that. Hey, I have a
yeah.
question for you, Leslie. You brought up the Women's Fiction Writers Association. I belong
mm-hmm.
to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
With this book, with only one of the four main characters being female, did they consider it women's fiction?
Yes, and it took a struggle because, not because of the male figures. They have
mm-hmm.
said that as long as the protagonist goes through an emotional journey to transformation, it qualifies. What bothered them were two things. First of all, that the protagonist's story begins when he's 16, and they won't do YA. And I had to appeal the decision to say it covers 11 years. These twins age into men, 27-year-old men by the end. So that was one thing that they objected to. The other thing was the thriller thing that, you know, my Amazon, because it's a hot genre, my, you know, Atmosphere as well as Amazon likes to categorize it as a thriller. So they had a knee-jerk reaction to, oh, it's a thriller. That's just, you know, someone's chasing you and you're trying to get away. That's not
They thought you had a thriller formula going on instead of an actual journey.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So, yeah, it took an appeal on my part. I was told by an insider that three people on the committee said it was women's fiction and one said no, and she won't tell me which one, but...
No, I was just curious because my next book coming out has three main characters, one of them female, two are not, and I've just now put in to see if it might be classified as women's fiction, and I was just curious if that was even a possibility.
Mm-hmm. So. It is. As a matter of fact, there are even some men who belong to WFWA authors, some male authors, who write about male characters. So, yeah, transformation.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic.
Well, so, Leslie, reviews, how do you deal with the good and the bad and the not so good?
Well, I haven't had too many bad ones. Yours kind of kicked me in the gut, Tom.
Okay.
Like damning me with faint praise. I'm not accustomed to getting those sorts of responses. But, you know, I understand that it didn't meet your expectations because you were expecting a certain kind of book. And I understand that. But you can't really get too upset about reviewers who are expecting a certain kind of book. They like a certain kind of book, and my book isn't their kind of book. You know, so you can't go and do battle with everyone that is looking for a different kind of book than what you've written. I've gotten enough really good reviews that make me feel pretty good about the book.
Right. I just want to clarify something. It was, I work with books, I work with formulas, and the conflict is important, I think, in a lot of parts of the book. But as you pointed out, much of what you needed to describe was the characters, the whatever you want to call it, the narcissistic abuse psychology, that you had to get deep into that. I understand. I totally understand that. And in my formula, it just fell short of a 4-star, but it was very close to it. And I just want to make sure you understand that I didn't want to kick you in the gut. I was really looking forward to it, and it was a good book, and it was all that I expected it to be. And I do know, again, as I said in my review, that I think you've got a future, and I am really looking forward to the sequel. I can't wait for that to happen. So I'm really glad that you're going to continue with this. It's a great story, and the characters are very well developed. So let's see now. You, what's next for Leslie Kane? We know what you're going to be doing next, and we're getting kind of close to the ending. So this is sort of your Oscar moment, as we tell all of our authors here. And any parting words of advice to aspiring authors? And would you like to thank anyone out there for the successes you've enjoyed in life so far?
Oh, my gosh. I've got to thank Cammie Finch, But I've also got to thank my critique partners. My critique partners were, they got me over the finish line. And especially Nancy Abouliahar, she was magnificent. And interestingly, they pointed out the same things in my novel as a developmental editor at Atmosphere pointed out. So they were really on track. They also kept asking, well, why doesn't Gavin just, you know, fight back? And that's why I actually introduced the high school counselor who was a psychiatrist himself. So he could explain why Gavin couldn't fight back. And otherwise, I wasn't going to get that deep into it. But if readers, you know, my readers are going to be the same as my critique partners, questioning, well, why doesn't he fight back? They need to be shown why he can't.
Exactly.
And, So that's why the first part of the book dug very deeply into the headspace of Gavin, and well, also revealed some things about the parents too. They had issues too.
You know, the brother relationship, you know, you still have to operate with that relationship in your life. That's why it's important to know that dynamic because, you know, you're not just associates or friends even. You're connected by family. So that's where it was really interesting. So
And identical twins, the bond is even stronger than just brothers.
Right.
So it's... you can't pull away. You know, it's like one of my lines in the book that Gavin said that he just couldn't escape Devin's clutches every time he would be pulled in like a moth to the flame. And it's just the bond is so strong.
Right, right. Anything else you'd like to say before you leave us? We need to know where we can contact you if we want to, you know, contact you about your book and your upcoming book.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm on all the social media, Leslie.Kane on Instagram and LeslieKaneAuth3 on Facebook. But, yeah, I'm on all the social media. Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Very good. Anything you'd like to end with there, Terry, for Leslie?
No, just that it's been really wonderful getting to know you and talking with you. And I too am excited about your next book. Just out of curiosity, do you think you'll go with Atmosphere Press again?
I will certainly consider it, yes.
Okay.
There's been a weird sort of thing about half a dozen people, including Atmosphere and including my developmental editor and all my CPs and my betas. They have all said the same thing. This would make a perfect Netflix series.
Very good.
And
very
you would be
good.
Perfectly okay with that.
Yes.
I would.
Yes. Yeah. Leslie, it's been a pleasure. We're running out of time here, but
okay.
I look forward to more from you. And thank you very much for being on the Writer's Lounge.
Thank you. And thank you, Terry.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
And there you go, Terry. And briefly, once again, it's Leslie Kane, Secrets in the Mirror. Go out and purchase that book. And Terry, any last thoughts from you tonight?
No, I don't think so. You know, don't ban any books. Read what you want. Get out there and read.
Exactly. Okay, and October 24th, next week, Haunted Onondaga County. This is a special Halloween broadcast. Hope you'll tune in for that. Until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and the eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Broadview. My name is Joseph. On March 20th, 2020...
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make